Coming up, the United States has once again won the President's Cup, 17.5 to 12.5, with Xander Schauffele earning the clinching point. We break down the week that was with interviews and analysis, plus we look ahead to the future of this biennial team event. It's time to pop the champagne as Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
It was such a dominant performance. So this is how those singles shook out on the Sunday. That thriller Siwoo Kim defeating Justin Thomas in that opening match. Jordan Spieth claiming his first single victory in any President's or Ryder Cup. He was unbeaten 5-0-0 last week. Sebastian Munoz as well threw everything at Scottie Scheffler. He managed to clinch a point for the internationals, but it was that knockout punch for Team USA with Xander Schauffele taking down Corey Connors by one. So let's hear, shall we, from these always ever entertaining victorious team press conferences with Team USA.
I don't think it's working. It's not working. Try that one. That's why you have teammates.
Like my beers, I got three of them.
You know, coming across the finish line against Patrick Cantlay in a playoff, which, to be honest, like, it's not that hard to beat Patrick Cantlay in a playoff. I did it this year, too. But,
I mean, we would sit in the team room at 8 o'clock at night and go, where is everybody? Somebody was in the gym. Somebody was in therapy. We've learned that we traded ping pong tables in for ice baths. And I went looking for guys last night, and there we had two at a time in the ice baths, and we had guys on tables. We had
one after the other, you know.
No. Patrick had his feet in. Patrick had his feet in with somebody else.
So to get to bond with these guys, you know, we've all played against each other forever, except Kiz, because he's been playing forever.
There's nothing that any of these can do that can hang with me tonight. I promise you. I have never seen a better display of golfers and a worse display of partiers. And I am the best partier on this board. Amen.
So I was wondering what your high point of today was.
Sitting up here with the boys as champs. That's my high point.
Great answer, great answer.
That was a stock answer, by the way.
You want to expand on that?
Nothing but stop. Oh, my
gosh. Happy, happy days for a victorious Team USA. Well, you heard Kisner say it. He's the best per partier on the team. He said it's going to be a long night, USA, with a little champagne bottle. And how about an update from Max Homer this morning? What a rookie performance. 4-0-0. He goes, update, I am unwell. Eamon, I would not want to be in Max Homer's shoes this morning, but I mean, what a week they had at Team USA. We always, always knew they were the heavy favourite. And yes, the internationals put up as much of a fight as they could on the Saturday, and we'll come to that. But this US team, it feels different. They have this newfound confidence where they go out there as a brotherhood and they expect to win. They have got so much strength all the way through the team on those singles. I mean, there just is no weaknesses. The weight that they have is almost unbeatable right now.
Yeah, and you got to pity Max Homer. This is two Mondays in a row with a hangover coming off his victory last week in the Fortinet Championship. What was striking in this President's Cup is how the American team has now built up both a couple of core teams that they can send into battle in the way Europe used to do with the Sevies and the Olathabals in terms of JT and Jordan Spieth, and then also in Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. Those are two teams that you figure will be the linchpin for a long time to come. But you've also seen individuals really find a space in this team. Tony Finau this year, Max Homa, another one. It seems such a strong team. And what you really saw in that press conference was unity. These are people who like each other. They're comfortable in each other's company. And it's easy to forget how long that was not the case on the American team. You know, you go back to Phil throwing the captain under the bus at the Ryder Cup in 2014 at Gleneagles. Patrick Reed doing the same with Jordan Spieth as well after the loss in Paris in 2018. Then the distraction of the Koepka-DeChambeau feud last year heading into Whistling Straits. It's been a long time since the American team has had 12 guys on there who clearly are at ease in each other's company. That's what should be worrying for the European side next year. It's not necessarily how they played, there's a unity in this team that hasn't existed in a long time.
It's obviously an advantage coming in as the heavy favourites, but it does come with its disadvantages as well, because you do have that weight of expectation. And the Americans, it was really refreshing to see them coming off those sessions on Saturday when they lost that afternoon session. They were pissed, as they said. They were really, really frustrated. And it does mean a lot to them to win the President's Cup. You know, so often we come into this event and we just think it's going to be an absolute wash and the USA team are just going to walk away with it. And often historically, you know, they have. But this year, 2019, it has got that little bit competitive. And you can see that this does mean a lot to the Americans and the performances that we saw from them. I mean, Max Homa as well, his first President's Cup, going 4-0-0 as a rookie. He is an absolute breakout star for the Americans. And he said, with that putt that he made on the Friday on 18, that you can't put money, you can't put a price on a feeling like that. You cannot buy an emotion like that. Obviously, you know, making suggestions towards other things that we have seen in the game this season. But this is stuff that money can't buy. And it means so much for this American team to be on this team, because now they have this unity that they haven't had in a long time for the US.
And it's interesting to hear Homa after the victory talk about how painful it was at Kiawah Island last year when they were doing team fittings for the Ryder Cup team, and he realised at that point his chances of making the team even then were slipping away from him. His form wasn't good, he wasn't expecting to be there, but to go through that process, to see all the team outfits there, knowing that the odds were against him making it, and how much that hurt him at the time and drove him and fuelled him to what we saw out of him over the last few days. It's such a strong team from top to bottom in the US. But though you look at those individual results in the singles yesterday, 6.5 to 5.5, that's not a dominating performance. So while there are certain tent poles and weapons in this team in terms of foursomes and four balls, when you drill down to a granular level of one elite player playing another elite player, which is ultimately what we're going to have in Rome next year as well, it's perhaps not as decisive a victory. You know, we're not handing them the Ryder Cup now, but they certainly seem to be better positioned both in terms of team unity and in the basic skill set of the guys they're sending out there than we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it was a very, very convincing win by the US team. And I just love the alter egos that come out of these. Xander Schauffele. Who is Xander Schauffele when he wins a team event for the US with the cigars and the swag? I mean, the man, we just don't see that from them in normal tournament play. So a lot of good stuff to come out of the US team. But there was also some absolutely brilliant scenes from the internationals as well throughout the week. You know, despite coming in as heavy underdogs, they clawed themselves out of that deep hole that saw them go 8-2 down after two sessions. You know, Saturday was their day. They won the afternoon four-ball session 3-1. They put up a valiant effort on the Sunday singles. They never lost their heart all the way. They battled for the shield, and we saw emotions for them that we have never seen. So let's just take a look at the international. Their player records for this year. Sebastian Munoz said that this was one of the best weeks of his life, said that he was so disappointed that it's over because he just enjoyed it so much. He was unbeaten 2-0-1 alongside Christian Bezuidenhout as well, 1-0-1. Adam Scott in his 10th President's Cup got those couple of points up on the board. I've got to give a note to Tom Kim. We'll be talking about him later in the show. 2 points crucially on that Saturday that really, really turned this event around for the internationals. So let's hear from their leader, Trevor Immelman, because as he says, this team, they are to be taken seriously.
This team is no joke. And I'm sick and tired of it being spoken of as a joke. We love this event and we love our team, and we cannot wait to run this back and have another shot.
That's a powerful sentiment from Trevor Immelman. This team is no joke. They are to be taken seriously. And afterwards in that press conference, he said, at some point, they will win. And you can potentially see that happening, because some of the dynamics that we saw, especially coming through on the South Korean side, you know, KH Lee and Tom Kim taking down Scheffler and Patrick Cantlay on the Saturday. I mean, that was a huge moment. Siwoo Kim and Tom Kim taking down Cantlay and Xander. You know, these are some big, big moments that we've seen that could turn the tide and began to turn the tide, especially with Tom Kim as well on Saturday.
Yeah, and Trevor Immelman deserves a lot of credit for trying to emotionally bind this team together, because there are built-in disadvantages for the international team in the President's Cup. Start with the fact that they only play team competitions every 2 years. It's not like the American team going from President's Cup to the Ryder Cup. They have a time to feel their way around. They know what teams work. Guys develop relationships better. It's easier if you're doing this every year than every 2 years. The format also disadvantages the President's Cup team because they are always going to be the shallower bench. And once you start to have five matches in every session, well, then you have fewer and fewer places to hide your weaker players if you are the weaker team. So I think that counts against them as well. And then you add in what we've seen this year with the Liv defections as well, which seriously depleted what Trevor Immelman had to work with. And he's already cobbling together a team. Every captain is, with the differences in geography and in culture and in language. The international team captain is always cobbling together as an act of compromise to get the best possible team out there. And Trevor Immelman did a remarkable job on that. But ultimately, it looks to me more that you can say this will impact this player as an individual. I don't necessarily say 2 years down the road what the international team would look like. I think it's much more changeable than the American team is. But when you look at what a Tom Kim did this week, or a Cam Davis, or Sebastian Munoz, you look at guys who think they could walk out of this team event thinking they do actually have the metal to compete mm-hmm. at the absolute top level for the biggest prizes against the best players in the world. I think it's that kind of a confidence boost for them.
Yeah, well, we saw that exact example at the Ryder Cup last year when Scottie Scheffler beat world number one John Rahm in singles. And look what Scottie Scheffler did because of the boost that he felt like he really, truly belonged out there. And Sebastian Munoz said that beating Scheffler on that Sunday was the biggest achievement of his career. And who knows what kind of a boost that's going to give Sebastian Munoz. It was an amazing performance. And I think for these guys as well, for the internationals, as you mentioned, it gives them an idea of where they are at with their games in terms of high-pressure moments. Jordan Spieth said some of the moments that you feel in these team events, the pressure can only be emulated when you're in contention at a major, which not a lot of these international guys have ever been. So to understand your game under pressure, to take away the camaraderie, the relationships, the newfound friendships that they'll be able to kind of tap back into on tour, it's just a huge, very important experience for these internationals that I think, you're absolutely right, will boost them forward in their individual games going forward.
And when you look at that Korean core that we saw this weekend between KH Lee, Tom Kim, Sungjae Im, and Siwoo Kim, it was so much more demonstrative and it was a very effective group. But if it's a sign, if you're the international captain, that you can't catch a break, three of those four players have yet to do their mandatory military service in South Korea. KHE is the only one who's done that at this point. So at what point those players have to make that decision, it's something that's looming out there in the horizon, that it's never quite plain sailing if you're the captain of the international team. And you also got to do some emotional building up again. This President's Cup is going to Royal Montreal in 2 years, and the only guys who didn't manage even a half point in this President's Cup were Taylor Pendrith and Corey Connors, the two Canadian guys. So there's always a problem coming mm-hmm. if you're the President's Cup captain. Sometimes the light at the end of the tunnel really just does seem like the headlamp of an oncoming train. And that, if whether it's Trevor Immelman 2 years from now or Mike Weir, as expected, there will still be a lot of issues because, as we know, 2 years is a very, very long time in this game.
It is. And, you know, whatever way you look at it, there is huge potential in this international team. It feels like they're only getting stronger. They had huge setbacks. They've lost some big, big names. But they did make it exciting on the weekend. And that's what, as golf fans, you can ask for. Sunday was huge. Now, of course, the internationals didn't get it done. But, hey, I can tell you, they had a pretty good time on Sunday night. Take a look at this. This is Shota, Hideki Matsuyama's caddy. He had the Team USA sign his entire chest. Look at this. And he's proud of it. You know, that's what these weeks are all about. Okay, well, stay with us. We are just getting the party started here on a Monday. Plenty more reaction on the 14th President's Cup coming up as NBC's Golf On Course analyst John Wood stops by with his big takeaways. I'm not sure if he's got as much swag as Xander Schauffele does, though. Stay with us here on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by WinGrips, the best grips in golf. And Bushnell Golf and the new Wingman, crank up your game. And by Ameriprise Financial, advice worth talking about.
Welcome back to Golf Today. Time now for Winning Moments presented by WinGrips. And here's one more look at that clinching moment on Sunday as Xander Schauffele defeated Corey Connors 1-up to give the U.S. the President's Cup for the 12th time in 14 years. Afterwards, Xander caught up with our Todd Lewis.
Man, they clinched the cup for the United States. Did you feel the weight? Were you aware that if you were able to at least tie this hole, that you would clinch the cup for the United States? And what was it like if you knew?
Yeah, no, for sure. I was aware. You know, I saw it calling up on the board, sort of three up or four up. I saw so well up. I just knew if I could sort of get it done, we can get, you know, get to the celebration sooner than later. And man, it wasn't stressful. You know, I needed a lot of help, along the way. And so we had, you know, probably a more of a pillow fight than not. Some really bad golf, some really good golf in between. But overall, you know, Corey helped me a lot, and you know, I'm just lucky I was able to take advantage of it.
You had some big moments in your career, winning multiple times on the PGA Tour, winning a gold medal. Where does this fit in, clinching the Cup of the United States?
It's just different, you know. I really didn't want to let my guys down here. You know what I mean? Just you know, when it comes down to you, you just want to be able to do it. So it wasn't really how we envisioned it, to be completely honest. Maybe that's why, you know, more of a sigh of relief once the putt went in versus a celebration. But yeah, I'm very happy.
Last night in the press conference, you guys seemed motivated. I'll use that term. How intensely purposed were you guys today?
Yeah, you know, we let them in. You know, we lost that session and we let them in. So we gave them a bunch of life for today, 12 points out there for grabs. And we knew it was going to be tough. We knew they're hungry. We knew they sort of saw some light at the end of the tunnel there versus the first day or two. So. Yeah, just happy. You know, winning's winning. You know, no picture on the scorecard here, so we're just happy to get it done.
Finally, what will you remember about this team?
We all get along so well. You know, we're all so competitive in our own way, and if you kind of look across our team, everyone's had to sort of go through something this year or sort of got over something this year, you know, winning multiple times or being a major champion for the first time or, you know, me winning when I haven't won in a long time. And, you know, it's just cool to be able to share it with everybody, and we all just get along so well.
Cigars tonight?
I got plenty for everybody.
Thanks, Eddie. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And everyone deserves a puff of that cigar. Every single member of the 12-man United States team contributed at least half a point, with two players going entirely unbeaten. Jordan Spieth and Max Homa combined for 9 of the United States' 17 and a half points. We're pleased to be joined now by John Wood, who's been inside the ropes at American team events before. You were inside the ropes working for NBC last week, John. 17 and a half, 12 and a half. Was it more competitive than that, or is that a fair reflection of what you saw out there?
I think it was a bit more competitive than that. I think if you would have told most people at the beginning of the week that the clinching point would come at, you know, 5:30 on Sunday afternoon, I think a lot of people would have been surprised. So in my mind, it was a lot more competitive. I expected it to be closer than people were saying, just because it's golf. It's not like it's not tennis where the best player usually wins every single time. So I wasn't surprised, but I think it was a lot more competitive than people were anticipating.
You know, John, it was all looking pretty dismal for the internationals on Friday night. They were 8-2 down through those first two sessions. And we thought, hey, the week Sunday, will it even matter? Just talk us through the difference in the atmosphere and the momentum from Friday night to Saturday night. It was a very different competition.
It really was. You know, Thursday night after the Americans got out to that good lead, it felt like, okay, this is what people expect. It was going to be like this, and the rest of the week will probably follow the same form. But when you got through Friday and you got through Saturday, when the internationals really showed some mettle and came back, it was game on. And I think it was so great for the event, so great for the international team, that they showed so much fight and so much heart. And I honestly think the Americans enjoyed it too. Obviously, they don't want to lose a session, but it's more exciting. It's more thrilling when it's close and the other team is still in it. You want to win at all costs, obviously, but I think it was much more interesting for everybody after that Saturday four-ball session in the afternoon when the internationals just really bucked up.
John, who surprised you most, either as a partnership or as an individual in terms of what they delivered? And on the flip side of that, was there a player who you were surprised didn't quite bring the right game?
Tom Kim is the obvious answer. I mean, everybody knew he was good, but there's such a limited amount of golf that we've seen him play. See him play golf, not only play golf, but at 20 years old, really became a leader out there. Every match I saw, he was reading putts for guys, going over and encouraging them. His attitude was infectious for the whole team. And I said it coming in, you know, that international team, you know, 2 years ago, 4 years ago, they had experience, but a lot of times that experience is losing. So when you bring in guys who don't have that scar tissue, like Tom Kim, and it's all new and it's all fresh to them. They don't have that scar tissue to weigh them down. It's a new ball game, and I think he took on that mantle for the team, and everybody kind of looked at him and said, all right, that's the attitude we're all going to take. So he was, to me, the most pleasant surprise. The biggest surprise the other way, I would say, was Corey Connors. Corey really struggled this week. He's usually such an amazing ball striker, and he just didn't have his A game at any point during the week, and I think that was probably the biggest surprise for me. I thought he was going to have a good week just because match play is so important to stay in holes and hit the ball well, and that's his strength, and he just didn't have it this week.
I mean, you're right. Tom Kim felt like the linchpin to this President's Cup. He truly turned things around on the Saturday. He brought in so much fun, but he also sort of brought those South Koreans together and brought them in as part of the team as well. You know, with the language difficulties, it can often be something that we see in that International President's Cup team. But to see him holding hands with Sung Jae-im and the partnerships that we saw from them, but also other players as well who gained so much confidence, the like of Sebastian Munoz taking down world number one on the Sunday, Scottie Scheffler. For these guys going forward out of this international team, yes, they didn't win, but they gained so much from this experience. Do you think we may see them contend more often week in, week out now on the PGA Tour?
I definitely think so. You get an event like this and the pressure is so high, but it also is so fun that when you prove yourself, you can do it in this format, you know, not only playing for yourself and your caddy, but for 11 other guys and the captains. That's an added level of pressure that when you get back to a normal event, or even a major, you know, it's the same sort of pressure. So I think those guys going forward, Tom Kim, Siwoo Kim, it's just a huge boost of confidence for them, Sebastian Munoz, to play like this in an event this big on the road when really no one's, you know, rooting hard for you. That's a hard hurdle to cross. So the way they played this week, I think nothing but improved their confidence moving forward.
It seemed to be a very relaxed vibe this week, John, on the American team. It's like 12 guys who are very comfortable in each other's company. Now, you've been a caddy at 7 President's Cup and 7 Ryder Cups. So you've been in team rooms where there were personalities that are either a distraction or sometimes even to the level of being toxic. See, do you get the sense that this is a different era with this team now, that there's a unity that perhaps wasn't there over the last decade or so?
No question about it. I mean, I said at the beginning of the week, you would never do this as a captain, but I think Davis probably could have put 12 names in a hat and drawn them out and say, okay, you two go play, because everybody on this team likes each other. They play for each other. They love each other. And that makes a huge difference, especially in the team rooms when you know, we're not watching at dinners and when they're having fun and just hanging out. It's a different feeling when everybody gets along, everybody can play with everybody. And even if it's not a personality conflict, the way a Bryson DeChambeau plays golf is so different. It's a tough pairing. Patrick Reed, I get along great with Patrick, but again, it's a tough pairing. And sometimes you get people playing with guys who they're not super comfortable with one reason or the other. That's gone. This era of United States golf, they're all young, they're all fun, they love playing golf, they love each other, and you could throw any of them with each other and they'd figure out a way, I think, to get it done.
John, Team USA now, they're 12-1-1 all-time now in the President's Cup, you know, but still compared to the Ryder Cup, it's still very much in its infancy in terms of how many editions we've had. But the last couple of editions, the internationals have been that little bit more competitive. Obviously, they've received some hammer blows with the players that they've lost to live this time round. But Trevor Immelman said, we have got to take this team seriously and eventually they will win. From what you saw out there this week, can you see the internationals capturing another win at this event anytime soon?
Absolutely. It's a matter of time. I mean, people look at the overall record, and yes, it's very slanted towards the American side, but you think about going back to 2015 in Korea. That came down to the very last match, Bill Haas versus Sangmun Bae. You know, it was a kind of a blowout in New York, but then in Melbourne 2 years ago, I mean, we were, I say we because I was on that team, but if Justin Thomas and Patrick Cantlay don't make those putts on Friday afternoon, I think the United States would have been down 8-2 or 9-1, and they're not coming back from that. And even those matches came down to, I think, the second to the last match. So they're a lot closer, the individual matches, than the overall record. And, you know, those young guys that they got on that team now are hungry. They'll be on, you know, home soil next year in Canada, and or 2 years from now in Canada. And I think it's a matter of time, even though the United States is so strong, you know, stats don't lie, and that will catch up, and they are catching up. And it's you know, I think they're going to win within the next two or three sessions.
Of course, people do tend to focus on the overall score, John. So now we have these nine straight United States victories, and there's a fairly energetic conversation going on in the broader golf world these days about the potential for format changes to the President's Cup. Do you sense any appetite for that whatsoever among the players or officials on either side?
I don't think the players favor it. I think the players are pretty happy with the way it is right now. But there's definitely some thought, you know. I mean, there's been a lot of different formats bandied about, maybe throwing in women on both sides and combining them. And I think that'd be a lot of fun for the event. It would kind of make it stand out a little bit from the Ryder Cup. And I think it'd be a lot of fun to see, you know, Nelly Korda and Patrick Cantlay playing together. So I think, you know, that's something that people have talked about. I don't know that it's going to, because I think this President's Cup was a pretty good success for everybody involved. And like you said in a couple segments ago, who knows what the golf landscape is going to look like 2 years from now? It could be completely different. So there is some talk about it, and there is some interest in it. But I think for now, it'll carry on status quo.
Yeah, it feels like for now, especially over the weekend, this President's Cup was certainly a success. John, thank you so much. Great to have your insight out there on the grounds. I'm sure it was an absolute thrill being out there on Sunday. Awesome work, as always, and we'll see you soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, when we come back, there were two breakout stars this President's Cup, and they faced off against each other in Sunday singles. We'll talk a little Max Homa and Tom Kim coming up next.
Welcome back. Well, one of the great moments of the week undoubtedly came during Friday fourball as Max Homa and Billy Horschel defeated Corey Connors and Taylor Pendrith 1-up. Pendrith made a 13-foot 5-inch putt for birdie at 18, but it was Homa who buried that 11-foot putt to tie the hole and win the match. An experience that money can't buy, he said, better than many, many things in golf. And then on Sunday, in what was one of the most anticipated matchup of singles, Homa defeated Tom Kim 1-up. Kim led 3-up after 11 holes, but Homa won each of the next four to take a 1-up lead after 15. And after the victory, Homa caught up with Golf Channel with his takeaways from his President's Cup debut.
Best week of golf I could ever imagine. It was very special just to be on this team and to contribute and to bond with the guys, and some of the moments we've had together on the golf course in the team room have been amazing. This is I feel very, very, very lucky to be on this team.
When you were put up against Tom Kim after what he kind of did yesterday in this play, what were you looking for out of this match today?
A point. He's a great player and a really great kid. He's going to be amazing. But I wanted a point real bad.
Last question. This team from last year, this year and beyond seems set up for a lot of success, and you included. Is the sky the limit for the U.S. teams in team competition going forward?
I like our chances. You know, I'm one of the older guys on this team, which is crazy. But there's a ton of great Americans right now, some not even here. So I think America's going to be in a pretty good place for a little while.
Going to have some fun tonight?
I'm going to have a lot of fun tonight.
And Max Homa joined some pretty rarefied company here of rookies to go undefeated and untied in the President's Cup. Freddie Couples was a rookie, of course, only because 1994 was the first edition of the President's Cup. Shigeki Maruyama, the only international player to go undefeated, but Max Homa the first in 22 years since Stuart Sink.
Yeah, impressive, impressive stuff. Well, speaking of rookies, maybe the most talked about rookie of the week, that was 20-year-old breakout star Tom Kim and his magician work on Saturday. This was on the par 4 11th morning foursomes, an eagle putt to win the hole. And Eamon, that was such a momentum changer for the internationals.
And that was really his breakout moment to be the spirited, emotional leader of this team.
So he'd win that morning session alongside KH Lee, matches 2-1. And look, he's just getting the crowd going. This is a US crowd and they're right behind Tom Kim. So afternoon four ball, his tee shot on the first, pumping up the crowd. Look at this for a lucky escape.
It helps to be an engaging, likable character. Can you imagine if it was Ian Poulter standing there trying to G up the crowd like that?
Slightly different response, perhaps, but look, there's his teammate alongside him. They are just having such a great time out there. So Tom Kim now on 11, looking to eagle it again in the afternoon. Surely not.
Just trickles and trickles and trickles. It disappears. Back-to-back eagles. Tom Kim.
Him and Siwoo Kim, it was just a terrific partnership. So they would go one up there. So now the match was tied up 18. Tom Kim with his entire team watching to clinch the point for the internationals. This was the moment that turned things around and gave them hope. It gave them hope into Sunday, Eamon.
And a little Tiger invitation there with a full-on hat throw.
So they ended up winning that afternoon session. So Tom Kim, he played in all five matches, got those two crucial points coming out of Saturday, which turned that momentum. Lost out just in those singles to Max Homa. But let's hear from captain Trevor Immelman on his breakout star.
When it comes to Tom Kim, you know, this young kid has burst onto the scene in the last 6 months. And it has been such a tremendous, he's been such a tremendous gift to our sport. He has an ability to be a global superstar, this kid. I know he has the game, we've seen he has the game, but what I've learned about his personality and his heart and what he stands for this week, man, I am a huge fan.
Tom Kim receiving love from his captain, love from the fans, and love from Team USA as well. Look at this, not going to lie, this pick is pretty cool. You can see him alongside some of the boys, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas. An amazing, amazing week for Tom Kim, truly landing himself on the map and gaining a lot of fans on the way. Well, still to come on Golf Today, we'll hear more from this year's President's Cup captains. Plus, we dive into the future of this biennial team event with writer Shane Ryan. Okay, so for more on the 14th President's Cup, we welcome in golf writer Shane Ryan, who was down there on site at Quail Hollow. Shane, good to see you. I know you do a lot of work into studying the dynamics of these team events, the team strengths, the team weaknesses. What was your biggest takeaway from the victory that we saw for Team USA over the weekend?
You know, I think it's just another in the long line of impressive performances that the Americans have had since the Ryder Cup Task Force came about in 2014 after that Ryder Cup. There were a lot of jokes made about the task force, and it was admittedly a funny name. But the changes they implemented from, you know, the captaincy succession plan, using six crews to really looking into the science of how to make these pairings, has just been really, really successful. And, you know, it was a great President's Cup, but it just shows that, you know, what they've done has worked. And it's a lot of excitement, I think, for America going into the next Ryder Cup and the next President's Cup and on and on and on.
It does feel like the success of these teams, you have to play the long game. As you say, there are things that are implemented and put into place to build on the previous year. And really, the President's Cup is very much still in its infancy. But to touch on the international side, I mean, Saturday was a truly game-changing day for them. Tom Kim was just an absolute star. I know you have been flying the Tom Kim flag for a long time, way before those Saturday sessions. What made him so special over this weekend, do you think?
Yeah, I was into Tom Kim before it was cool. I just happened to be lucky enough to be at the Wyndham Championship covering it when he won his first PGA Tour event by shooting 61. And you can just tell there's something special about the guy. Part of it is his golf game, but part of it is his attitude. These clips, the fist bumps, the passion. He's a really funny guy. And his teammates really liked him. I think sometimes when you have young guys with all this bravado and, you know, these big gestures and all this passion, it can kind of rub people the wrong way. But I think it's telling that, you know, even someone like Adam Scott, who personality-wise couldn't be more different from Tom Kim, absolutely seemed to love him. And that was true for the entire team. And I think, and I wrote today on Golf Digest, I think he made this President's Cup.
He brought it to life on Saturday, without a doubt. He was the leader of his team, and everyone was sort of looking to him to really set the tone and create and build the energy. We saw him jeering up the crowds on the first tee, kind of unheard of, really, on US soil. When that lineup came up for the Sunday singles, I think a lot of people were expecting to see Tom Kim, perhaps in those first couple of matches, to clinch an early point, to get the momentum and to keep the energy high. How surprised were you to see him not go out until that 10th match?
You know, very surprised. And I should leave this with a caveat that I think Trevor Immelman did a wonderful job following what Ernie Els did in Melbourne of building an identity for this international team, and I think his players liked him. But if we're going to nitpick, you know, even in the press center while we were watching this happen, as it kept going and kept going and kept going, we're going, where is Tom Kim? I mean, you're down 4 points. You need to seize the momentum early. And you have a guy who really is the spark plug of this team. And he's been so much fun to watch. So, you know, not just for strategy, but to have his match matter, really, so the people at home can watch him. And we ended up getting a great Tom Kim Homa match. But unfortunately, by the time it came to its dramatic conclusion, the President's Cup was already over. So, yeah, it was a big surprise. And I think maybe in a really good week for Trevor Immelman, probably not the smartest decision that he made.
There's so much of these team events. You know, we hear Paul McGinley talk about it so much on Live From, in the power of momentum. And momentum is something that can be so strong and can win a team event for if it's working in their side. We saw it at Medina on Saturday night after Ian Poulter and Rory McIlroy just achieved those absolute heroics in their team matches. How important was it for the internationals to try and build on that momentum on the Saturday? And ultimately, was it just that they haven't got enough depth in their team and able to convert a day like that they had on Saturday?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think depth was a really big issue. But to your point, you know, you brought up Medina, and it's kind of interesting that Davis Love was the captain there. He had a 4-point lead heading into Sunday. He was the captain of the Ryder Cup team at Hazeltine. He had a 4-point lead heading into Sunday. And here he is at Quail Hollow with a 4-point lead heading into Sunday. And I talked to Davis late last year about what he learned from Medina. And that was the big lesson. Seize the momentum early, whether you're behind or whether you're way ahead. There's never a bad time to load the boat, as the expression goes, to put your best players forward and to sort of establish that this is going to be your day early. So, you know, we saw that with Davis. Certainly he seemed to put 8 of his best players right away. Boom, boom, boom. Starting with Justin Thomas and Spieth. Immelman did it to an extent, and Siwoo Kim came through with an unbelievable win against Justin Thomas. But again, you look at, you know, maybe Tom Kim should have been earlier. Maybe Sung Jae Im should have been earlier. But to your broader point, it probably didn't really matter what he did. The depth of the Americans is so astounding at this point that they're just a little bit in a different class. And I think that's going to change with the rise of global golf. But I don't know that there was any, you know, fantasy lineup that would have won that on Sunday for Immelman.
Yeah, and we'll get to the future of this U.S. team in just a moment. But you mentioned Trevor Immelman and how impressed you were as him as a captain. I mean, as he became captain, there was no such thing as COVID-19. There was no such thing as live golf. You know, he has run into some unimaginable hurdles in his captaincy. He's been robbed of two of his strongest players, Cam Smith and Joaquin Niemann. They would have been invaluable last week, that's for sure. What's your biggest takeaway in the way that he navigated around all of this and also just rallied his troops and created this energy and this bond? And they were just so united last week.
You know, I think I learned everything I needed to know about how well Trevor Immelman did on Friday afternoon. Now, here was a situation where the first 2 days had gone terribly, and the internationals were down 7-2 with the last match on the course. And really, you know, again, it couldn't have gone worse. They had every reason to be despondent or down. And Taylor Pendrith made a putt that could have had that match. As it happened, Max Homa later won the match, and so it was 8-2. But when Taylor Pendrith made that putt, Immelman and his entire team there watching were so passionate and so excited. And I thought, wow, even though these guys have been waxed over the first 2 days, they're still in it and they still believe. And then on Saturday, you saw that really, I thought, a heroic effort from that team to get back to a potentially winnable deficit going into Sunday. So, yeah, I thought he did a wonderful job. I don't think his job was to win this week, even though I'm sure he would disagree with me. I think his job was to continue building the team identity and the team spirit of the internationals for the future, and I thought he succeeded marvelously by that standard.
You're right. Those terms of goals he absolutely did achieve, but you mentioned it. I mean, the internationals did get absolutely waxed in those first 2 days. There was no other way of looking at it, and really before the event started and on Friday evening, we were questioning whether this event needs a shake-up. Does the format need to change? There's been a lot of conversation sort of building on social media as to whether it should be a mixed event and whether we should have 6 of the best international women joining that side along with the US side. I mean, that in itself would create a really exciting format. Do you think there is space to perhaps mix up the format with the President's Cup, or has what we've seen unfold over the last couple of days, has that sort of cemented itself to say, hey, it is what it is and it's a great event as it is?
Yeah, I'm of two minds there. I think, just like you said, it would be wonderful to have a mixed event. I think that would be such a great exhibition. And I think, you know, because of the strength of the international women, which is greater at this point than the men, I think it would balance things and that would be really neat. However, I also really love the President's Cup, and I think it was great this week. You know, even on Friday afternoon when it was going to be 8-2, and like you said, it seemed like it could be a really sort of embarrassing result. Even that was fun because three of the matches were close down to the end, and then it got really tense and fun over the last 2 days. So for me, I would sort of take a compromise position, and I always think back to 1987 when the U.S. wanted to change the Ryder Cup format to have another singles session and for it to be 4 days. And Tony Jacklin and the Europeans fought against it tooth and nail because they knew that with fewer matches, the team that has less strength has a better chance to compete. And I thought it was interesting in this President's Cup that in the two sessions with five matches, the internationals fared very, very poorly. And then in the two sessions with four matches, they did great. And the singles was really competitive. So for me, the tweak is fewer matches. Go do the Ryder Cup format, 4-4, 4-4, followed by singles. And I think instantly you're going to have a more competitive event.
Yeah, you can see why that makes a lot of sense. And just finally, this has truly sort of whet the appetite for the Ryder Cup in Italy next year. Of course, the Europeans couldn't get it done last time in Whistling Straits, but now they're back on home turf. They have got some exciting talent coming through, but those talisman, those stalwarts that we've seen for so many years on the European team, it doesn't look like they're going to be there really at all coming in next year. How much will the Europeans be looking at this performance from the team of the USA and thinking, well, they come in with so much confidence. They're a brotherhood. They're united. We haven't seen this from them in a long time. Are the Europeans going to be worried seeing what they saw over the weekend, do you think?
You know, I think the scariest thing in the Ryder Cup is a European team who thinks of themselves as underdogs. So if they are worried, I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing for the Americans. Look, you go back to, it's going to be, by the time we're in Italy, it's going to be 30 years since the Europeans have lost a home Ryder Cup. I personally think the Americans will win just because I'm so impressed with both the personnel they have and their captaincy sort of succession plan and all their tactics. But history certainly doesn't vindicate that prediction. And I think the Europeans, they have the Sevi Cup back. They're going to be ready for the match play. And I couldn't be more excited for Italy. I think it's going to be a total war. And I think the Americans will win, but really deep down, I have absolutely no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, the 1 year to go countdowner is pretty much on. Shane, thank you so much. It's fascinating diving into the dynamics of these team events. They're nothing like we ever normally see on tour. So great to have your thoughts and thanks as always.
Thank you very much.
Alrighty, well, stay with us because on the other side of the break, we've got highlights from the thrilling finish at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship. Plus, Ron Syrak joins the show with the news and notes you need to know from the LPGA. That's next. So, Ataya Titikun becomes the fourth player with multiple victories during the 2022 season, joining Jennifer Kupcho, Minji Lee and Brooke Henderson. So, the victory on Sunday marks the second of Titikun's career and season, and with her win, she earns 500 points and is projected to move from 7th to 4th in the race to the CME Globe, as you see there how the leaderboard shook out on a Sunday. Well, it has been a pretty emotional year for Danielle Kang. The 29-year-old revealed at the US Women's Open in June that she had a tumour on her spine. And following the major, she took time off and didn't return to action until the CP Women's Open in late August. The Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship marked just her third start back. And following her runner-up finish, she spoke with our Jim Gallagher Jr.
When you look back at where you were 4 months ago and you see where we are now, take us through those emotions.
Don't make me emotional. I'm just really proud that I'm even here. So obviously I wanted to win, but these are like tears of joy.
Tears of joy when you chipped in on 18. Take us through that because those aren't tears of joy.
Uh-huh.
When you chipped in on 18 and made it, you almost forgot from there. When you made the eagle at 18, all of a sudden now you're one up. Take us through that.
I told my caddy that I wanted to, my whole goal today was to finish at 17 under. And I told him I could chip that in because he didn't want me to be long and all that. But honestly, it's been hell. And to be here and
it's been. This is a special place for you. You have so many friends and family. I know it's tough, but where does this take you for the rest of the season now?
It's still going to be a process and it's a struggle almost, you know, sometimes in the morning and but I came out here to do something that I love, and I'm just so happy for my team. That somehow got me back playing this year, and I mean, there was a part of me that I didn't think I'd ever play again or contend, and but here I am, so I'm not that far off, and I'm happy about that.
And you should be. You should be proud of yourself. Thanks for spending time with us.
Crying on TV right now. I don't think I've ever cried by losing.
Well, that's okay. You did great.
So for more on the week that was, we welcome in our Golf Channel contributor, Ron Syrak. Ron, that was such an emotional and raw interview we've heard from Danielle Kang. You know, we can't imagine what she's been through this year. She's been very private in terms of the recovery. She is always such an emotional person. She pours her heart and soul into her game. How has this emotion played into her game, especially what we saw last week?
Yeah, she is an incredibly emotional player. She was away from competition for 81 days this year. And frankly, there were probably a lot of thoughts going through her mind besides golf about what the future held for her. But, you know, she won the 2010-2011 U.S. Women's Amateur, came onto the LPGA with great expectations. It took her 114 tournaments to get her first LPGA win. And that was a major championship, the 2017 KPMG Women's PGA at Olympia Fields. And I remember that day, she bogeyed into the 10th hole to fall one stroke back. And when she walked off that green, she was smiling. She was laughing. She was derisively talking to herself, psyching herself up. She then birdied 11, 12, 13, and 14 to go three strokes ahead. Brooke Henderson's making a run. Danielle bogeys 17. Brooke birdies. It's a one-stroke lead going to the final hole. And they both birdie it, and she wins by one. But she rode that emotion. She tapped into it and rode it. And I also remember being at the 2019 Solheim Cup at Glen Eagles. She was in the first singles match on Sunday. Went out and lost to Carlotta Segunda one down. U.S., of course, lost that cup by a half a point, 14.5, 13.5. The next day, I shared a car ride with her mom to the Edinburgh airport. We were together for about an hour chatting. And she told me how personally Danielle took that loss, that she felt that she had let the team down, that if she could at least halved her match, U.S. would have kept the cup. And then she went out and won a couple of more tournaments at the end of that year. She's always ridden emotion very, very strongly, sometimes for the good, sometimes for the bad.
Yeah, she absolutely wears her heart on her sleeve, and it feels like a chipping eagle on 18 in position that she was. It just feels like vintage Danielle Kang, and it's so great to see her back on the course and playing so well. She would ultimately fall just short to Thailand's Ataya Titicul. Now, she is such a breakout star, 19-year-old rookie, now a two-time winner this season. There's still a lot of golf to be played, though. What do you think is on the line for Ataya, do you think, going forward?
Well, you know, very, very subtly, we're on the cusp of a sort of a historic year here. She was the Rookie of the Year on the LET last year. She's got a pretty solid grasp on Rookie of the Year on the LPGA this year, but she's within striking distance of Minji Lee for Player of the Year. I think she's 44 points back, something like that. You know, she's got a chance. Yeah, there you see it right there, 35 points back. She's got a chance to get her. And if she does, the only women who've won Player of the Year and Rookie of the Year in the same season are Sung Hyun Park in 2017 and Nancy Lopez in 1978. You look at her game, Titicul's game, and there are no weaknesses. She hits it a long way, 16th in driving distance, hits 72% of her fairways. She's in the top 30 on tour in greens and regulations, putts for greens and regulations, total putts, fifth in scoring. Not a weakness in her game.
Yeah, well, this win for her made her the first LPGA Tour player in 5 years to win twice in her rookie season. And she's doing it with the Thailand flag on her back as well. Now, so far over the last couple of years, it really has been the Jutanagan sisters who have been representing Thailand, both multiple-time winners on the LPGA Tour. Of course, one of them being a multiple-time major champion as well. Do you feel like she could be the new breakout star for Thailand? Should she be the one that we're watching in terms of representing their country?
Well, you know, it's looking that way right now. You know, we got Patty Tavatanakit in there too. You know, Titicul right now is number 3 in the Rolex rankings. Patty Tavatanakit's number 30, has a major championship at the Chevron Championship. I think that someday we might look back at Arya Jutanagarn and Maria Jutanagarn as sort of the Siri packs of Thai golf, you know, that they are sort of motivating a new wave of players there. Look, Titicul was 10 years old when Maurya Jutanugarn was the LPGA Rookie of the Year. The motivation that, the Jutanugarn sisters have had on girls' golf and women's golf in Thailand is enormous, and we're just going to see, I think, more and more talent coming from there.
And just finally, the depth on the LPGA Tour right now is probably deeper than we've ever seen it. But there's this huge sort of parity in the women's game. Just over the last 4 or 5 weeks, we've seen Andrea Lear break through, Gabby Lopez, Paula Rito, Maya Stark, you know, new stars and stars returning to the winner's circle who haven't done it for numerous years. Ron, do you think that is good for the game? I mean, it's fantastic to see the stories and the storylines are brilliant, but we haven't got that dominance that we sometimes see in the men's game or that we have seen previously in the women's game. That's not really the storyline as it is now. Is that a positive or a negative?
You know, it's a different storyline, and I think it could be a very positive one. The individual sports, golf, tennis, boxing, always do better when they have that dominant, overwhelming star that the casual sport fan turns in to watch. But the men's game and the women's game, I feel, right now are in a very similar place. We don't have a Tiger Woods. We don't have an Annika Sorenstam. But what we have is a handful of players who are all capable of being number one in the world and another handful of players who are all capable of being number 1A in the world. Look at the women's game now. Jin Young Ko and Lydia Ko, the Korda sisters, Minji Lee, Titicul, Brooke, Lexi. There's so much talent out there now. And I think that's a different kind of vibe, you know, a different kind of excitement. We're not looking for that one overwhelmingly dominant player, but we're looking for that week in and week out intense competition amongst a whole bunch of players.
That we are, Ron Cyrak. Always good to hear your thoughts on a Monday. Thanks so much for joining us. It was a great finish on the LPGA Tour. We appreciate your thoughts. Thank you.
Talk to you down the road, my friend.
All righty. Well, let's get an update on the Epson Tour, shall we? The road to the LPGA, because it was a pretty exciting finish at the Murphy USA El Dorado Shootout on Sunday, as Brittany Yarder came from behind to secure her first Epson Tour victory. She was tied for sixth heading into Sunday, 5 strokes off the lead, but Yarder shot a 7-under round and made 5 birdies on the back nine to secure the victory. Well, speaking of thrilling finishes, we'll be joined by the latest winner on the DP World Tour. Guido Migliozzi took down his 3rd victory yesterday in France, but he's got his eye fixed on Rome and the Ryder Cup. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Golf Today. It is time now for the DP World Tour update. And it was quite the epic Sunday for Guido Migliozzi at the Cazoo French Open. The 25-year-old Italian closed out his day with this phenomenal birdie on 18 at the Golf Nacional. Honestly, one of the best approach shots you will see all year, from 197 yards to 6 feet on that island green. The only birdie on 18 all day, and what a time to do it. So with a bogey-free weekend and a fine around 62, Migliozzi tied the course record en route to his 3rd win on the DP World Tour, as the victory marks his 1st in 3 years. So let's take a look at the final leaderboard and how things shook out there in Paris. Guido Migliozzi took that 1-stroke lead over Rasmus Højgaard, who took the early lead on Thursday. He had a 6-stroke advantage through 2 rounds, but a 3rd round 74 left the door open on Sunday. George Coetzee also in the mix as well, a 5-time winner on tour, but it was Guido's day. And how about capturing the attention of next year's Ryder Cup captain? Luke Donald took notice of the win, tweeting, "Grand Guido, the only person to birdie the last day with it all on the line." Now, that is seriously impressive. Many congratulations. So with that, let's welcome in the winner himself, Guido Migliozzi. It is so good to see you. Congratulations. We have to talk about that approach on 18 first. You closed out an incredible comeback victory with nerves of steel. Take us, what was going through in your head as you stood over that ball on 18?
Yeah, thank you very much. All the year it's been all the year and all the round yesterday, it's been incredible. Just a great feeling. I was in a great momentum, very, very confident with my game. And that second shot on the 18 on the last hole was something that, it's a prize. I've worked really hard to get back on great golf, and finally I could play very, very good in a great tournament, and I'm just so pleased that I played that golf and that shot. It's something that I will remember for all my life.
Guido, you were 13 strokes back at the halfway stage of this tournament. At what point did your mindset change, or how did it change? Did you feel as though you just had to play all-out aggressive golf from that point onward?
I was, yes, I was many shots back. And at one point yesterday, well, the third day of the tournament, I was playing on the course and I just saw the leaderboard that, you know, Rasmus made eight on a par three. And I felt closer to the top of the leaderboard. And then I was on the green of hole number 12 and I hold the putt from 5 meters for birdie. And then I was from, you know, from 10 shots to the leaderboard, to the top of the leaderboard. And then I just went to three. So I felt that I could get very, very closer. And then yesterday I shot 9 under par, which is one of my best rounds of golf in my life. And so super happy.
As you should be, a final round 62, 9 birdies, as you mentioned. One of the best rounds of your life. I mean, to come through the field like that was so impressive. What do you think happened on that Sunday? What was the switch that you were able to turn on and able to put yourself in the position to close it out in the way that you did?
It's been very important, my putt. I started the day just... you know, that was a test for my putt. I worked really hard, and I was not holding great putts in the previous days. But I practiced it the day before, and I just changed a little thing. And it was a test for me that day. Well, yesterday, I just was thinking, let's see if I can hold some putts today and hit a low one. And then I hold a few putts in the front nine, and I just kept playing great and hit great shots from tee to green. I've just been very, very solid from tee to green, and holding putts, it's always something special to keep your, you know, your energy to the next hole and to the next birdie and to -9 at the end.
Guido, we saw that your victory got the attention of Luke Donald, who of course is captaining the European Ryder Cup team 1 year from now. In Rome, where does it rank among your goals to be on that team in your home country a year from now?
Well, it's a real goal. It's a real dream. I played with Luke last week in Rome, in Marco Simone, where the Ryder Cup will be next year. So, I mean, it's a long path from now to the Ryder Cup. But, you know, we're starting to make something really good.
And that's exactly what the Europeans need on their team. It's guts and it's nerves. And you certainly proved that on 18, of course, a previous Ryder Cup venue as well. And I know at the beginning of the season, your goal was very much to just keep hold of your card. You felt like you weren't playing that well. You dropped outside the world's top 100. I mean, this locks up your card and so much more. How does this change your mindset, your confidence and your trajectory going forward from here?
Yeah, it's crazy sometimes where golf brings you. I mean, I started the season with a great potential. I was playing all the majors. Well, I played the Masters, US Open and British Open. And, you know, big stages for me is where I want to be and where I would like to perform. But I just didn't perform. And, you know, I worked really hard to perform, but I didn't perform. So I was a bit gutted, a bit upset, but I just kept working very hard, and I changed little something on the swing and on my mental as well. And yesterday has been one of those days that you know, even golf gives you something, and I just appreciate that, and you know, something special now.
Guido, we've heard a lot of talk recently that the European Ryder Cup team is kind of caught between generations of talent, that old guys have aged out and wondering where the next generation of talent is coming from. But now in the first 3 weeks of qualifying for next year's Ryder Cup, the winners that Luke Donald has been given is Shane Lowry, Bob McIntyre and you, who are three guys he's going to want on his team. Do you think it's kind of overstated, the idea that America will be so dominant, a favourite next year?
I mean, it's a very strong team, but we play with heart. We can be brutal sometimes. For example, in Paris, Team Europe, it's been, incredible, just did an amazing job. And, you know, for me, that's the best tournament in golf and in the history. I mean, there's not just the quality of the golf shots, but it's the emotional, it's everything you bring to the team. It's a game of earth as well. So, you know, something special. It's something different. There's not just golf skills, but it's everything. So it's part of the captain to choose the right people to get a good team. And, you know, for example, in Paris, they were amazing.
Well, Guido, you are doing all the right things to put your name in the mix. So congratulations. I know you said you love to battle out there on the golf course, and you certainly did, and you earned that title. So enjoy the moment and best of luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you very much. Thank you.